Good afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure to have a full house here at the FCC for lunch today. Welcome. My name is Tara Joseph. I'm a journalist with Reuters here in Hong Kong and also on the Board of Governors here at the club. Before we get started, just a few notes. Please, could you put your phones to silent? If you want to tweet while we're having today's event, please do go ahead. We just don't want phones ringing. And also, just to highlight a few events coming up at the club, we're in the midst of a very busy season in terms of events. I won't highlight them all at the moment, but while we're talking about China today, just to note that this coming Monday, Professor Michael DeGaulier will be here. Many of you may be familiar with his polls about Hong Kong and how people feel about Hong Kong. He's here for one more time before he leaves Hong Kong and to sort of give us a final poll on what he's learned about Hong Kong people and their sense of identity here. That's coming next week. Also, next week, we have an evening event with a film with a journalist who went to the Spratly Islands. And he will be speaking about the film. We'll also be showing the film. His name is Tomas Etzler. And on the back of the UK elections, we have Professor Charlie Jeffrey coming to speak about the UK and what the elections could mean for the future of the United Kingdom. So please have a look at the website and do sign up and come along. And now to the event of today, Chinese politics in the era of Xi Jinping and Dr. Willie Lam. It's wonderful to see someone who's so familiar with a club that he takes pictures of the audience as they take pictures of him. We're very pleased to have him here today. Dr. Lam is known as a veteran sinologist. He's written 7 books. He's been the China editor at SCMP and at CNN. He is currently teaching Chinese politics at Chinese U here in Hong Kong. And I'd love to know whether his view about Xi Jinping is renaissance, reform, or retrogression. So let's find out. Dr. Willie Lam.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it's really a great pleasure and privilege to be back to the FCC, and thanks, Tara, for a very generous introduction. I think I was here several years ago to give a pep talk on my last book, which is Chinese Politics in the Hu Jintao Era. Okay, Chinese Politics in the Hu Jintao Era. This was several years ago, but I'm glad to say that it's now back in circulation, okay? It's now back in circulation. You can get it from Amazon, okay? You can get it from Amazon and other places. Well, as I go along, you will see that that is a interesting connection between Hu Jintao, who was Xi Jinping's immediate predecessor, and Xi Jinping. But I would now start our odyssey with President Xi, who is perhaps the most charismatic leader in China since Deng Xiaoping. Okay, so this is the president playing football. Well, football is not only China's most popular sport, but also Xi Jinping's favorite sport. And I have spent some time choosing this picture because I wanted to show something where China will not be ruling the waves in the 21st century. But I was told by my usually reliable sources in Beijing that Xi Jinping is determined to turn the tide, and that is before Xi Jinping steps down, maybe in the late 20s, he hopes that the China team will win the World Cup, and that is the first secret agenda of Xi Jinping. Okay. we keep hearing rumors, of course, unconfirmed, that some big SOE conglomerates close to Xi Jinping are thinking of buying up Manchester United or Barcelona or Real Madrid. Okay, so this Chinese dream doesn't look so immaterial or wishful thinking at all. Okay, so we have this Chinese dream. A little flashback to Xi Jinping, who, despite his prominence, remains kind of a mysterious figure. But I think if we look at the early days of Xi Jinping, he was a so-called sent down or rusticated youth for all of 6 years, actually, from 69 to 75. And at that time, Xi Jinping mentioned that of all the privileged princelings, only he and the son of Liu Shaoqi, as some of you know, he is the first Chinese president, decided to spend the best part of the years in the countryside. And then even after they had found plum jobs in the cities, they decided to return to the countryside to build a career there. So this, I think, speaks for the fact that from his early days, he was already very ambitious. He was already determined to become the number one and maybe something more. Okay, so let's look at the Chinese dream and also the Port of Blue Standing Company member. As you know, the PBSB is China's highest ruling council. But something strange is happening because, according to Deng Xiaoping's very clear instructions, and we have to remember that even though Deng Xiaoping was credited for economic financial reforms, Deng Xiaoping actually, in the early 80s, put forward some very useful, interesting, and inspirational ideas to revamp the party institutions, and one of which was that drawing the lesson from the Cultural Revolution of 1966 to 76, drawing the lessons from the crazy ways in which Mao Zedong ruled China, Deng Xiaoping postulated that China henceforward has to be ruled by a committee, that means the Politburo Standing Committee, and that the number one leader, that means the General Secretary, would at most be first amongst equals. But we can see that Xi Jinping very clearly has towered over his other colleagues to the extent that many of my friends in Beijing, after his first year in office, they kept asking me, who are the other members of the Standing Committee? Why are they almost invisible? Whereas, according to rough calculations, Xi Jinping's aggregate appearances on the 7 o'clock CCTV news, if you add all the time slots devoted to Xi Jinping, then you will see that they exceed the time slots assigned to the six other Standing Committee members put together. So this is not a leader fulfilling the role of first amongst equals, but very much that of a supreme leader. Okay, now we turn to perhaps the central issue facing the Xi Jinping leadership, and that is after he has successfully, through Machiavellian or other means, amassed powers, he is now easily as powerful as Deng Xiaoping, of course not yet as powerful as Mao Zedong, but after he has amassed so much power, what will he do with the power? What will he do with the power? So he has indicated that the China dream equals to the renaissance of the Chinese people, and more importantly, whether he will use the power to institute economic, political, social reforms, or whether it is actually a retrogression that he is resuscitating with gusto the norms and the ideals, the policies of Mao Zedong. According to the theory of new authoritarianism, Xin Chuan Wei Zhuyi, which was first put forward by Deng Xiaoping, having drawn the lesson from the apparently successful application of this model in Singapore under the direction of Lee Kuan Yew, Deng Xiaoping said, the ruler in developing and complex countries like China must have near absolutist powers to push through reforms. And surprisingly, one of my heroes in the party, the liberal icon Zhao Ziyang, who was, you know, was kicked aside after the June 4th event, Zhao Ziyang even himself said he agreed with the theory of new authoritarianism. So the big question now being asked by diplomats, journalists, business people in China is, now that within the record 2.5 years, Xi Jinping has arrogated to himself powers not only over the party military and foreign affairs, which traditionally fall within the portfolio of the General Secretary, but he has also been able to take control of the internal state security apparatus, even the internet, and of course the military, because of course the economy, because traditionally the Prime Minister has the portfolio of the economy, and he is the ultimate arbiter on economic policy, but not Xi Jinping. Li Keqiang, who perhaps is not only the only English speaking member of the Politburo, but the most liberal oriented, the cadre who is most aware of what's going on in the world. Li Keqiang is very clearly playing second fiddle to Xi Jinping. So the question remains, now that Xi Jinping is control over pretty much everything, he is obviously riding roughshod over his other colleagues on the Politburo. What will he do with his power? Okay. Perhaps I can try to answer this question later. Okay, so Xi Jinping's secret agenda. As I said earlier, his openly stated agenda, according to the Chinese Dream Mantra, is that by the year 2021, the centenary of the establishment of the Chinese Communist Party, China will have become a moderately prosperous society, a Xiaokong Shehui. And then the next centenary, which is much more important, is that by the year 2049, the centenary of the establishment of the People's Republic, China will have largely closed the gap in terms of economic power and military sophistication with the US. Okay, so these are the two openly stated goals of the party and Xi Jinping himself. However, internally, and this is actually not so much of a secret, the major goal underpinning the Chinese dream mantra is that the CCP, must remain China's perennial ruling party. In other words, we do not expect any sizable reforms from Xi Jinping. And I must draw your attention to this interesting remark made by Xi Jinping in 2008, 3 years before he became General Secretary. He said, "Whatever powers we possessed in the past, we may not possess them now." Okay, that means referring to the fact that even though the party was very successful in the late 90s and it was actually quite popular in the 50s, these powers we may not possess today. Okay, and then the second part, whatever powers we possess today doesn't necessarily mean that we can possess those powers forever. So very clearly, I think Xi Jinping has set his agenda very clearly. The party must never brook any challenge. Okay, no challenge is allowed for the party. And of course, particularly not from some place like Hong Kong. Okay, even though I will, I won't be discussing Hong Kong until the Q&A period. But what I want to draw attention to is that this view of the CCP as a perennial ruling party is totally non-Marxist. Okay, totally non-Marxist. Well, according to my very shallow knowledge of Marxism. I took a course on Marxism 101 maybe 20 years ago. The key concept of Marxism is that economic, political, social, cultural developments change. Okay, the clear message of Marx is that things change according to economic developments, according to technological developments. So to set a China's goal, the perennial preservation of the CCP's privileges and exclusive powers is totally non-Marxist. Okay, totally non-Marxist. But of course, you can also say that Mao Zedong, who I think is a big question on my mind, how many books by Marx and Lenin Mao Zedong had read. Mao Zedong, of course, is clearly not a Marxist. Okay, he was a leader of a traditional peasant rebellion. Okay, and secondly, under this Chinese Dream mantra, there is a heavy dosage of nationalism. Okay, so it's not surprising to see that Xi Jinping will be stoking the flames of nationalism, I think, in the coming years in policies towards the Asia Pacific and so forth. And that is a clear-cut goal to push out the U.S., that China would displace the U.S. as the final arbiter of affairs in the Asia Pacific region within perhaps the coming 20 years. And nationalism is very important because, as we all know, communism and socialism are totally obsolete, and the party doesn't have ballot box legitimacy. Okay, the CCP has no conception of elections according to international norms, as we have seen, by the developments in Hong Kong the past few months. Okay, the election formula proposed by the National People's Congress on August 31st is a fake election. It's a North Korean-style election. It is not real election. The CCP has no basic concept or understanding of international elections. So the ballot box has, the CCP has no ballot box legitimacy. And there are two major pillars of the CCP's power base. One is incrementally growing improvement in standard of living of the people, but is, I think, a fact that GDP growth rate would slip to about 6 or 5% towards the end of this decade. So the economic legitimacy is being jeopardized. So what remains as the sole pillar of legitimacy is nationalism. Okay, it's nationalism. Okay, and China's perennial ruling status, the CCP's status as China's perennial ruling party. The other fact underpinning Xi Jinping's determination to perpetuate the party's status is that he has drawn the right lesson, at least according to himself, from the collapse of the Soviet Union, the Communist Party of the Soviet Union in 1991. Okay, so in the first major speech given by Xi Jinping after taking power in November 2012 was a speech which counseled his advisors, his colleagues, to draw the right lesson from the Soviet Union. And according to Xi Jinping, the Soviet party collapsed because the party failed to take control of the army and the internal state security apparatus. That means the Soviet party failed to take control of the gun, that means the army and the knife, the internal security apparatus. And moreover, young leaders like Mikhail Gorbachev and Boris Yeltsin, they criticized the teachings of Lenin and Stalin, so thereby weakening the ideological pillar of support within the party. And so that's why we see that for Xi Jinping, there's no question of questioning or criticizing Mao Zedong. And Xi Jinping subsequently put forward this so-called theory of the two negations, which is very difficult to translate, but which can be summed up as people who have benefited from Deng Xiaoping's economic reform should nonetheless never criticize Mao Zedong, because according to Xi Jinping, Mao Zedong laid the foundation for the party's greatness. Okay, the other interesting and pivotal aspect of the Chinese dream is that On the one hand, the CCP must remain China's perennial ruling party, and at the same time, the leader of the CCP, that means Xi Jinping himself, he must remain the unchallenged supreme leader. Okay, so that's why we have seen a return of the Marxist, or more exactly, the Mao Zedong era personality cult around Xi Jinping, which is fairly obvious. Xi Jinping, for example, there has been a well-established tradition within the CCP that leaders cannot put out their books, or leaders cannot have their pet theories enshrined in the party constitution until after retirement. But now Xi Jinping, having been in office for just 2.5 years, he has already published 4 or 5 books. Well, I have to pay my respects to Xi Jinping. He is much, much more prolific than myself. Okay, so he has already published 5 books in different languages. So this breaks the rule of a leader publishing books only after their retirement. And at the same time, he is now maneuvering to put his pet theories, for example, the spirit of Xi Jinping, okay, and then the so-called theory of the 4 comprehensives. So Jiang Zemin had his theory of the 3 represents, which is impossible to translate into English, but for Xi Jinping, he has his 4 comprehensives, which is a bit easier to explain to Western audience, because the 4 comprehensives simply means comprehensively building a moderately prosperous society, comprehensively deepening reform, comprehensively governing the nation according to law, and comprehensively administering the party with strictures. Actually, if you ask me, it's just a bunch of cliches, okay? But lo and behold, I think we will see these 4 comprehensives being enshrined in the party constitution maybe at the upcoming 19th Party Congress 2 years later. Okay, and we have this Xi Jinping app, which just came on the market a couple of months ago, and already our irreverent Western correspondents have already labeled this an electronic little red book, okay, Mao Zedong's little red book for the 21st century. Okay, here we I have summarized Xi Jinping's departure from the reform teachings about reform and institutional change by Deng Xiaoping, but I won't have time to elaborate on this. So I recommend that you read my book. Okay, the book gives a more clear cut and unambiguous picture of this very complicated story. So you see that in the area of erection of a personality cult, the abandonment of the collective leadership concept, and also the organization of ideological campaigns and so forth, and most importantly, Deng Xiaoping's perhaps his most important reform idea, separation of party and government, has all been stood on their heads, okay? And now I'll give you a few examples of Xi Jinping. Actually, instead of separating the powers of party and government, actually, he has pulled out all the stops to ensure that power remains at the highest echelon of the party. And to this effect, he has created 2 or 3 monster organizations at the apex of the party, including the Central National Security Commission, set up in 2013, the Central Leading Group on Comprehensively Deepening Reform, set up in also late 2013, and subsequently also the Central Leading Group on Cyberspace Affairs, which again is chaired by Xi Jinping. So Xi Jinping is personally in control of the so-called Greek firewall of China, of internet censorship, and also laying down the policies for the development of the IT industry in China. All this are looked after by Xi Jinping himself. Okay, but perhaps the most intriguing so-called secret agenda of Xi Jinping is the fact that being a Greek friend of Putin, he has decided to what I called out Putin, Putin. Okay, because Putin a few months ago just celebrated his 15 years in power, and Xi Jinping, as far as I know from my sources in Beijing and Shanghai, Xi Jinping has already decided to serve three terms, at least three terms. Okay. Normally, according to the convention within the party charter, a top leader, for example, Hu Jintao, can only serve for two terms of 2 5-year terms as general secretary. But Xi Jinping, and here I must state a state secret. Okay, I must divulge a state secret. I'm 1 year older than Xi Jinping. Okay. And I can sympathize with the aspirations of us, you know, fellow middle-aged people. Okay, and actually, according to the Chinese Constitution, a person who is 61, Xi Jinping turns 62 next month. Okay, a 60-year-old person is just a spring chicken. Okay, not even a middle-aged person. So on this part, I can totally empathize with his aims to remain top leader until the 21st Party Congress in 2027. Okay, in 2027, by which time he will only be 74. Okay, he will only be 74. So he will still be very much fairly energetic, middle-aged cadre at that time in 2017. Okay, but as to the mechanisms which he will do so, I have discussed with some of my sources in Beijing, and they say that he will relinquish the position of General Secretary and President, but he will hold on to the chairmanship of the Central Military Commission, the chairmanship of the Central National Security Commission, and so forth, so that he will in effect be the power behind the throne. Okay, the power behind the throne, and we can see this quite clearly that again, in contravention to Deng Xiaoping's edicts about early steps in rejuvenation, Xi Jinping, who is confident that he can stay in power for at least 13 more years, he is not paying any attention to rejuvenation. So that's why I give you just one example. In 2005, when Hu Jintao was into the third year of his power, Hu Jintao had already groomed a few dozen sixth-generation officials, and at that time, there are a few dozen sixth-generation officials who have already been elevated to the rank of minister or vice minister. But today, in 2015, Xi Jinping has only promoted one seventh-generation official to be vice to vice ministerial position, and that is the vice mayor of Shanghai, Mr. Xi. So, well, we don't have time, unfortunately, to go into that.
I don't want to interrupt a spring chicken, but I'm going to. I just want to make sure we have time for some Q&A.
Okay,
so,
okay. But one last picture, okay? One last picture. One last picture regarding the rule of law, okay? Regarding the rule of law. Well, much has been written about Xi Jinping's commitment to the so-called rule by law of Chinese characteristics, but my reading is that he is, in effect, building a comprehensive national security legal regime to enforce party control, okay, to enforce party control. So my conclusion that is that he is much more of a follower of Han Fei, okay, who I think some of our Chinese colleagues might know. Han Fei was the second century BC legalist scholar, and he is a Xi Jinping is a fan of Han Fei, and he's applying Han Fei's tactics. So he is now setting up a comprehensive group of legislations, including the law on national security, which will be passed most likely next year, the law on state secrets, the law against spying, the anti-corruption law, the anti-terrorism law, the regulations on foreign NGOs, the regulations against rumor mongering on the internet, and so forth. So for the first time, we have now, the Beijing now has in place a comprehensive legal system with which Xi Jinping can deal with big or small challenges to the regime. Okay, so unfortunately, I have to stop at this juncture, and I'm glad that even if the new law on national security, which will likely be passed in March next year, has important ramifications for Hong Kong, but we still have a window of 9 months, okay? There's still 9 months to go before the enactment, and at least at the FCC, we can still go on disclosing state secrets and so forth, at least until March next year, okay? So I would commend my colleagues to take full advantage of this 9 month window. Not to mention, of course, the likely promulgation of Article 23 by the next chief executive, whoever he might be, within the first 1-2 years of his assuming the position of chief executive. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, and let's not stop there. I just wanted to make sure we had time for some questions and answers. So if you'd raise your hand, give us your name and organization, starting with Florence right next to me, we can get going.
Thank you, Florence de Changy. Could you comment a little bit on the anti-corruption campaign that you haven't really touched on? Is it for political survival only and in this strategy that you described, or is there behind it some moral issues? Genuine moral issues.
Yeah, thank you. I think we have to look at it both ways. In terms of the so-called the flies and mosquitoes, I think he has. We have to give Xi Jinping some credit because obviously he has been much more conscientious and efficient and effective in dealing with corruption in a general manner. Okay, in a general manner. However, if you look at the from the elite point of view, if you look at the killing of big tigers, okay, then very clearly Xi Jinping is just repeating the old trick which started with the caves of Yan'an in Shaanxi, okay, and that is this tradition begun by Mao Zedong of using the anti-corruption card as a potent weapon against your enemies, okay, so it's no secret that there is apparently a new gang of four committed to make trouble for Xi Jinping, and members of the new gang of four consist of, for example, Zhao Yongkang, okay, who is the most senior ranked official to have been incriminated, and he will be brought to court maybe next month. So Zhao Yongkang, we all know, together with Bo Xilai, were dead set against the ascendancy of Xi Jinping. So we have a return actually to this old but nonetheless, very effective use of anti-corruption as a tactic to get rid of your enemies. Thank you.
Right over here.
I'm To Han Shi from the South China Morning Post. I have two questions. One is that if Xi Jinping wants to stay on in power after his term is over, won't he create a lot of opposition the way Jiang Zemin did? My second question is, how do you compare Xi Jinping to the reformist despots of European history like Ivan the Terrible, Peter the Great, Catherine the Great, Bismarck of Germany, King Louis the 14th of France, who said, you know, the state, I am the state, you know?
Okay. Well, actually, I failed in my A-level exam on European history. I know very little about European history, except that this Louis XIV dictum, you know, I'm the state. For Xi Jinping, it's quite clearly that his statement is a variation of I'm the state. It is I'm the law, okay? Xi Jinping, his dictum is I'm the law. So that's why, like I said, he put together this very comprehensive national security legal regime, right? As for the second question, actually, by now, Xi Jinping has already made many enemies, okay? I don't see the enemies increasing by much if he were to make a call after the 20th Party Congress in 2022 that he would stay for 5 more years. So, but this is the secret of Xi Jinping, the fact that through sheer exercise of Machiavellian tactics, he has been very successful, and he has negative and potentially devastating dossiers he could use against members of the Shanghai faction, members of the Communist Youth League, the two most important factions within the party. So I would say that if he has the guts, and I have no doubt that he has overarching ambitions, if he had the guts to directly take on the two most powerful factions in the party, that means the Shanghai faction and the Youth League faction, then he would not hesitate, for the sake of his Chinese dream, okay, to out Putin, as I said, to serve, I think, for much longer, perhaps for much longer than Putin would have done. Thank you.
Right over here.
David Tweed from Bloomberg. What does this agenda mean for businesses outside China, or businesses, foreign businesses who are already in China or looking at China? What does it mean for the future of their, what does it mean for how they should be looking at whether they're going to continue to invest and their engagement in China? Is it a risk?
Sure, thanks a lot. As you might have read, in business papers, the multinationals have been complaining a lot that the business climate for multinationals has declined dramatically since Xi Jinping took over. And I did not mention that, one of the conclusions he drew from the collapse of the Soviet Party was that the Soviet Party had lost control of the economy, okay? Has lost control of the economy. So I think there is no doubt that Xi Jinping, who is a super nationalist, he will be looking at further nurturing so-called national champions. So that's why, despite his protestations about reform, these around 100 huge SOE conglomerates, CNPC, China Construction Bank, and so forth, they will continue to enjoy a monopolistic status. Okay, monopolistic status, and we see that, for example, this perhaps one of the most ambitious initiatives of Xi Jinping, this so-called One Belt, One Road strategy. Practically 90% of the beneficiaries of this overarching infrastructure-based project, the beneficiaries are, without exception, SOE conglomerates. So there is no question that Xi Jinping would further liberalize the economy by, for example, privatizing all these SOE conglomerates, which not accidentally are run by princelings or people with good businessmen with close ties to the party. Of course, he will continue to proceed with reform, financial and other reforms, which would not impinge on the party's prerogatives. So, for example, I think they have ambitious plans to globalize the RMB, RMB, to make the RMB fully convertible. They also have plans to lift the restrictions of the movement of capital movements in and out of China. But these are important and laudatory reforms. They are being pushed forward because they will not impinge upon the prerogatives and privileges of the party. In fact, with the globalization of the RMB, for example, some of these SOE conglomerates and big firms run by the princelings, they stand to make more money. Okay, so those reforms, which will not affect the party's control of the economy and which will actually contribute to the profits of well-connected semi-state-owned companies in China, those will be put push forward. And one last word is that Li Keqiang, well, you still remember the word Liquidnomics? Well, Liquidnomics, which is a very liberal collection of ideas emphasizing market orientation and market forces. Liquidnomics only had a shelf life of 6 months. Okay, it was put forward in March 2013 and then totally disappeared from the media by the end of 2013. So the kind of liberal market oriented liberalization of the economy favored by Xi Jinping is now totally dead. Okay, totally dead. And there is heavy speculation that Li Keqiang might be moved to another portfolio, perhaps the National People's Congress 2 years later. Right.
We have time for just one more question, so Tom will finish up with you. And just to let you know that Willie will be here afterwards and also here for book signing.
Well, I can stay here until 5 o'clock.
Tom Holland, the Gavcal Research. Willie, you've painted a picture of a formidable political strongman. What are Xi's weaknesses?
Well, he has a gorgeous, glamorous wife, so I don't think he has any weakness for the opposite sex. And well, I have used up my quota of state secrets, so I cannot tell you this totally unfounded rumors about the fact that actually for about 15 years after they got married, Xi Jinping and Ms. Peng lived separately. Okay, one in Fujian, the other one in Beijing. His weakness is that his aspiration, that means to be the Mao Zedong of the 21st century, is a it's a very obsolete proposition. It's a very obsolete proposition. He doesn't seem to be a man of the 21st century. Many of his empathies, his ideology, his aspirations are more in sync, are more in sync with the Yan'an caves in Shaanxi, where he grew up. Okay, so he is not a modernist person, even though his wife, every time she goes abroad, she would show off using Xiaomi or some of the other Chinese smartphones. But I doubt very much if Xi Jinping has any interest in this, because Xi Jinping's interest lies elsewhere, and that is big time power. Okay, he's a power hungry person. He's a power hungry person, both domestically and foreign. And you can see the PLA Honor Guard goose stepping on Red Square last week with the Russian brass. So Xi Jinping has this ambition to be the emperor, at least for the time being, the emperor of the Asia Pacific. As for being the emperor of the world, I think this will not happen, because that is still, as most analysts say, there's still a perhaps a 20-year gap between China and the U.S. in terms of military capacity. But suddenly, Xi Jinping has overarching, perhaps a bit dangerous concept of first the nationalistic aspirations for China, and secondly, his personal hold on power, absolute hold on power. And of course, he hopes, because thanks to censorship, all the historians who will be writing about Xi Jinping 50 years later, he hopes at least, will be party-trained historians. So he also has aspirations in that regard. You know, his position in history as the second Mao Zedong. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, and I'm afraid we've run out of time, though again, please do feel free to stay. And Willie, on behalf of the FCC, a small gift. It is not a tie, as you can guess by the square. Thank you very much for joining us.
It's not a bomb, right?
No, certainly not.
Okay.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, please don't forget the books, okay?